We knew the economy was going to turn at some point, but you never really can be prepared for timing or speed of change.
I hope this cycle we're in doesn't take us back to the days of regulatory purgatory, where everything we did had consequences.
As the world continues to change, we have found out we need to be even more nimble as we move forward.
By requiring things like business continuity planning and pandemic plans, we need to think proactively about what we need to do in the future.
We better grab our helmets and start getting prepared today.
Banking is a risk business, but in today's environment, we are being faced with uncertain times. Financial institutions have always had partners who could help evaluate, address, and mitigate risk. But today, they need to lean on those partners more than ever. Welcome to Bank on Whitfleet. Each episode will feature discussions around industry issues, hot topics, and current trends, giving you an insider's look at how top performers and professionals are staying ahead of the curve. All right, let's get into today's conversation.
Welcome to another episode of Bank on Whitfleet. My name is Mike Bessel, and I'm a partner in our financial services practice and will be your host today. This podcast is the third in a series of podcasts in which we discuss areas that management and the board of directors should both exhibit knowledge in and make sure they're documenting conversations and policies appropriately. As we all know, regulators require that boards be knowledgeable and strategic in their roles to fulfill their fiduciary responsibilities to the institution and their shareholders, if applicable. While we won't be discussing governance specifically, we will talk about some of the types of information that boards should expect or require. We also want to discuss management's role in ensuring that they provide appropriate information to the board to allow them to be knowledgeable, but not necessarily so that the board can micromanage areas. We do also hope that if you're listening and see this information as being valuable, that you either pass it on to your board members or perhaps even use it as an educational tool in one of your board meetings. Today, we're going to be focusing on the strategy area. We're really pleased to have Marcy Bomberg-Montoya with us on today's podcast. Marcy joined Whitfleet a little over 2 years ago and has recently become a principal at the firm. Congratulations, Marcy. She serves as a leader of our strategic services area. Marcy has over 25 years of experience in both financial institutions and private enterprises. She was in the C-suite at a Midwest regional bank, was a founder and CEO of a consulting firm serving fintech companies, and CEO of a software as a service company as well. Marcy is a faculty member at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Graduate School of Banking, an advisory member of the Marquette University Commercial Banking Program, and also serves as chair of the advisory board for Marquette's Emerging Technology Lab. She's also a sought-after speaker on a range of topics, including strategy, innovation, digital transformation, culture, and client experience. And boy, Marcy, that resume is making me tired here already. Welcome.
Thanks, Mike.
So, Marcy, let's start off with a couple of general questions related to strategic planning and strategy in general. We all know there's an expectation for institutions to discuss strategy and ultimately to have a strategic plan as well. We also know the board's supposed to have a role in setting strategic direction, but generally relies on the management team to manage the day-to-day operations of the institution. I've seen some boards evaluate and adopt management's strategic plan, seen other instances where the board is very involved in development of the plan. So can you talk about the overall responsibilities of the board and management, perhaps contrast those for our listeners? And if you can, also discuss how detailed and involved the board should be in determining that overall direction versus how much management should be driving the overall plan.
Sure. I think that's a good way to kick off our discussion today, Mike. And, you know, obviously we have the regulatory expectations, you know, of boards and their responsibilities, but, and we'll talk a little bit more about that today, but putting that aside for a moment, we should look at best practices. You know, and take a look at the three phases or versions of boards. And this is adapted from a book that's called Boards That Deliver. So those three kind of phases of boards are ceremonial, liberated, and progressive. So when we think about what's a ceremonial board, and a ceremonial board is really, it's compliance focused, more passive, you know, rubber stamps the CEO's ideas and not too much in the way of productive dialogue. A liberated board, there's more productive dialogue, but they're still driven by more routine issues and mechanical solutions. I really call that an in the weeds board, if you will. And I know, Mike, you and I have talked about this before. You know, some examples of boards that we've seen that really dive into the weeds, you know, looking at overdrafts, looking at individual consumer loans, you know, individual line items. And that can be very frustrating to management when you think about wanting more strategic direction or more collaboration and the value that board members bring to the table. Now, in a progressive board, that's where everyone participates. The information is focused, timely, and regular. Directors learn the business but don't manage it. Focus on value add and underline that word strategy. And you know, we've seen several scenarios, you know, really where management does come up with the plan and the board adopts it, or the board comes up with the plan and management is left to implement. We see this more so, I think, in family-owned or tightly held community banking institutions, or, you know, what everybody really wants to drive to is a more collaborative or consensus-driven plan. A lot does depend on the board makeup. You know, as I mentioned, the family are tightly held. Do you have dominant shareholders that are on your board? Are you a publicly traded institution? That can all make up some key elements of that dynamic of planning. Putting all of that aside and that background, when you think about the highest performers, they all have a very similar process. And that process really does start with strategic questions that are asked of everybody involved. So the board, or say a strategic planning committee of the board, that is discussed with leadership. Having those groups jointly set their vision. So just taking a moment to clarify the difference between vision and mission. I see this get confused a lot. Mission, it typically doesn't change. It's why you do what you do, but the vision does change. So say every 3 to 5 to 10 years, you have a new vision of where it is you want to take the institution. And then once that mission, you know, is set, the vision is set, it's looking at key performance indicators. So the financial metrics, making sure that they're realistic, but also stretch, you know, the institution depending on its goals. I think key elements too are changes in strategic direction to be discussed. So anything major, such as an acquisition, going public, those sorts of things should be jointly discussed with management and the board. Now, your strategic priorities or your big rocks should also be jointly agreed to. And then that's when you make that shift, you know, to management for the execution, you know, to come up with the strategies and the actions that are going to be required to achieve the plan. You know, the devil's always in the details. So you want to make sure that people who are really delivering it have a say and a role in setting what that looks like. And then obviously management needs to report progress, barriers, challenges, you know, resources needed to the board, and then the board can interact with management to ensure that dialogue is continual and that they're provided the resources they need to be able to execute on that plan.
Thanks, Marcy. I think you hit on a great point a minute or two ago there when you talked about the progression that boards have had over the years. I can recall reading board minutes and the way back past and seeing that boards were approving all the expense checks and so on that were written and those sorts of things. So I think there's been an evolution, and not everybody's there yet, but certainly they're getting there. And kind of along those lines, is there risk to the board if they don't make sure that the institution is moving to more of a strategic direction or a strategic process or a strategic plan as far as that goes, or at least having those strategy discussions? And if there is more risk, what is that risk?
Well, I know, Mike, you've been around the block for a while at Whipfley. We won't say how many years unless you want to share that with the audience. But
A couple,
right? But we've seen, unfortunately, you know, getting phone calls from groups that say, boy, the regulators are coming down on us hard because we don't have a plan. You know, and that's not a situation that you want to get yourself into, you know, because the regulators really do view strategic planning as the initial step, you know, in a sound governance framework. So a basic responsibility of the board consists of making sure that operations are running successfully, sound decision making, and all of that is obviously dependent upon the size and complexity and strategies of the bank. But really, the effectiveness of an overall governance program is a critical determinant to the long-term health of the bank. And really, you know, regulatory guidance is very clear on this, and this commentary comes right from their guidance, is that, you know, banking is an intensely competitive business, and it's subject to significant and unexpected economic change. More so now, I think we've seen that. So when you're looking at growth, you're looking at interest rate environments, you know, these pose important strategic questions for bank directors and executive managers. And in this challenging environment, you have to have a disciplined approach to identifying opportunities and risks. In enterprise risk management is one, or ERM, that's very critical. Planning for the achievement of goals within those acceptable risk tolerances, and then staying on course with an appropriate control framework. You know, these are all prerequisites, you know, for success. So longstanding corporate governance principles, you know, sensibly applied based on the size and complexity of operations, that's the key starting point for an engaged, you know, bank management team in reaching its goals.
I think that governance point is really important too. And if people go back and look at things that happened during the Great Recession, when institutions were getting consent orders or other regulatory orders, almost every one of those that I looked at had a requirement for the board to do some strategic planning, or at least have a strategic plan and a roadmap, if you will, moving forward. So I think that's a very important point as well. You know, we also talked about different ways to develop a strategic plan, whether management does it, the board, and so on. But one of the questions I think that gets asked a lot is, who really gets to decide whether the board or management should be asking for outside facilitation help? And is it a good idea to have an outside facilitator or not?
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, I'm biased on this question, but, you know, having sat on the opposite side of the desk, too, you know, being involved in banking as long as I was, I had, and I'm using air quotes here, the opportunity to facilitate an internal strategic plan. That was the challenge. It's very difficult to be a facilitator and an insider when you think about the exchange of ideas, and then you also think about, you know, the different agendas of the folks that you're working with. And also, you know, if you're part of that management team, you know, how well can you challenge being a facilitator the rest of your team beyond maybe their comfort zone? You know, those were some things that I discovered that was very difficult to do as an insider. So, you know, now as somebody who's an advisor and a facilitator, I would say that 90% of the time we're engaged by a chief executive, you know, typically a CEO, and sometimes in concert with the chair of the board. You know, I've had discussions with both in tandem at times, but about 90%, it's the CEO who really makes that decision. And, you know, really the key elements that I've heard when making that decision is that, you know, keeping the discussion on track. You know, all of the folks that I work with on my team, you know, are trained facilitators, meaning we know how to herd the cats, right? We know how to get the good discussion. We know how to build consensus, deal with some of the conflicts that can present themselves. Because there can be some, I'm sure, Mike, you've seen some very heated discussions, you know, at times when there's some disagreements, you know, to get everybody on the same page. And the need to arrive at an executable plan, challenge the group, especially my clients this year have all asked me to kindly and gently challenge them outside of their comfort zone. We also, an outside facilitator, especially the ones I know that we work with on our team, you know, we have that best practice insight. So we have close to 1,000 financial services clients, and we really learn from the highest performers, you know, that we work with too, and can bring that to bear. Confidential discussions is another one. I don't know how many times we've uncovered some challenges that were not identified, you know, by a CEO or by a management team that come out in some of those confidential discussions that you have with the board one-on-one that help shape the agenda and the key issues that need to be dealt with during a planning process. Because if there's conflict going in that you're not aware of, the end result coming out the backside is not as valuable. You know, in addition, you know, an outside facilitator advisor can bring key insights in areas of digital transformation, technology, change management, talent, culture, client experience. A lot of those key issues are things that we're finding that boards and executives are wanting some education and some knowledge during the planning process so that they are planning and making data-driven decisions to understand what's happening in the market.
I think those are great points, Marcy. And I'd just like to add one or maybe emphasize another one that you had mentioned earlier. And that is that if you are trying to participate and facilitate a plan at the same time, being an insider, and I've done that on some outside boards that I've been on, it's really difficult to participate and try and facilitate and keep the process going because you don't want to stem the discussion, but you also want to find a way to get your thoughts and points in. And that's really hard. So it's much easier to have somebody from the outside for that reason, as well as all the other reasons that you mentioned. So what's the right frequency for strategic planning? I mean, some boards do it religiously every 3 years. Some have an annual process. Some do it sporadically, which is usually only when the regulators require it, right? But what are the best practices for addressing strategy, and are you seeing shifts in those best practices?
Yeah, there's definitely been I hate to use the word paradigm shift, but I think that's probably the best way to describe it, at least from what I've seen. Even, you know, from where when I first started at Wipfli a little over 2 years ago, a lot of our clients were, you know, it's something they had to have, right? We have to check that box. The regulators require it of us. You know, we need that facilitation. Let's put together a three to five year plan. And then it would do what? Sit on the shelf until the next time you got together. And here's something we could just, you know, present to the regulators. The board feels good about it. A lot of that is changing, especially for the highest performers in the industry. And it's really a mindset shift, moving from a strategic plan event to a strategic way of being. You know, we all need 3 to 5 year plans, but, you know, what we're seeing is building in agility and fluidity. What I mean by that, because those are squishy terms, is that you understand you have a vision, you have a 3 to 5 year vision of where you want to be, but you know with rapidly changing circumstances, unanticipated and anticipated in some cases, you need to be somewhat agile to be able to take advantage of opportunities that may present themselves, but also with disruption and change, are you going to stay on a track that maybe is not going to get you to where you need to be? Or are you going to have the ability to have real-time discussions, not just every 3 to 5 years or even annually, but are you having those at least quarterly, if not monthly? It really is a shift away from checkbox and go through your action items to putting aside time to talk in a strategic manner as opposed to just developing a plan.
So, Marcy, this might be a little bit of a loaded question because I understand every plan and every process is going to be different. And frankly, every strategic objective for an organization, you know, they aren't going to be the same from organization to organization. But what are the common things you typically see covered in the strategic plan or the related strategic discussions?
Yeah, it's interesting when we think about that because they do vary so much. I mean, they're really customized when we look at strategic planning, whether you've got heavy duty board involvement with, you know, custom surveys or interviews, employee engagement surveys, you know, change management. There's so many different things that can be baked into that process, but the common denominator for a really effective plan and process is really starting with a situational analysis. So a lot of us are familiar with the traditional SWOT. That's the exercise, right? The four columns, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. Well, we don't use that anymore. We've expanded that, blown it up into really looking at the overall economic landscape. Also, what have been your prior victories? What are things that you've done really well that you can leverage moving forward? But also, what have been some of the failures or the stumbling blocks to make sure that you build that in and don't make that same mistake twice? What are your internal capabilities, you know, and resources that are available to you? What could be some of those barriers or issues that could trip up any of the best laid plans? Looking at your opportunities in conjunction with risk, you know, that's a theme that is going to run pretty much through this entire discussion today, is that enterprise-wide risk, not just for larger institutions that are, say, over a billion or even over 500 million in assets, but for all of our community banks, weighing out your opportunities and your risks and that risk appetite. Looking at external threats, and what are your resources and your capital? So really starting with what is that current landscape, understanding the complexities of the environment that you do businesses in, both from a macro and a micro. So macro, you know, overall, the banking landscape, the economic conditions, a lot of which is outside of our control, but then your micro and what is happening, you know, right in your backyard, you know, with your competitors and internally. And having a good grasp on that situational analysis, including research on consumer behavior, you know, where the industry is headed, all those best practices will help set the stage for very valuable discussion that results in strategies that are more effective than if you hadn't taken that time to do the situational analysis.
So Marcy, I'm glad you kind of talked about risk a little bit, because the risk appetite topic has been coming up a fair amount lately. And I guess the question is, should determining and documenting an institution's risk appetite be part of the consideration in the whole strategy and planning process?
Absolutely. I think that's really one of the key elements you need to start from. You know, all of the elements of risk, from reputational risk, going on down the line, right? When we look at the primary job of a board, right, is the safe and sound operations of the financial institution. So if you come up with some outlandish, you know, growth strategies, we're going to grow by $100 million, you know, in the next, you know, year. Well, what does that mean? You know, is that in line with your risk appetite? What kind of lending does that require for you? Are you well suited for that line of business? Regulators will come in, they'll look at your plans. And we've seen that, unfortunately, as a firm, where we've been asked to step in and help, you know, organizations that have not done a good job of assessing risk. So they've grown either at the expense of profitability or asset quality and other key elements, or the expense of capital. You know, there's so much that goes into that. It's a very complex topic, probably for a whole nother podcast, but the risk portion has to be fully integrated. Enterprise management, ERM, has to be fully integrated into your strategic planning process.
So Marcy, one of the people that probably should be in the room then, as you go through the strategic discussions or strategic planning process, should be the chief risk officer. And I guess maybe a follow-up question to the whole risk thing and broad aspect, who should be in the room when you have those strategic discussions? It seems logical that it should be the board of directors and senior management. Are there times when you should have a broader group involved?
Yeah, don't get me quoting Hamilton or start singing in the room where it happens, right? So, sorry, big fan there. No, I mean, in all seriousness, I've seen some planning groups that really only consist of, you know, the board and maybe the top three of executive management teams. Those plans are not as successful. And there's a couple of reasons why. You don't have that diverse view from all aspects of the organization. I really have a hard time with groups that talk about the value of their talent and their employees, but yet their HR or talent directors don't have a seat at the table. Also, the discussion of risk or going into a new line of business, aligning themselves with fintech or with, you know, new processes, the digital delivery, and your head of IT doesn't have a seat at the table. Same as it relates to compliance and risk. Are you looking at a new market, a new line of business, but yet the head of compliance or risk doesn't have a seat at the table. So having that broad interdisciplinary view or input into the plan, ultimately knowing that the board sets strategic direction, but having the input similar to your situational analysis for the other factors, is extremely valuable to have all of those people have a seat at the table. And last but not least, you know, marketing and client experience has become so, you know, it's table stakes now for our community banks, is to have an effective plan of outreach and communication and client experience. So having those folks at the table is critically important. I hope I didn't leave out anybody, so you can send the hate mail to Mike and not to me if I did.
Well, I do think that it's important to have a broad group and a cross-section, Marcy, as you mentioned. And there's one more point, I guess, that I'd just like to add to that, and that is that it's different to sit in the room and hear the discussions and know where the overall direction of the organization is going than to have that overall direction determined behind closed doors and somebody else trying to communicate it to you, especially if you're the person who has to execute on that. So I think, again, there's some limits there. I think you'd agree with that, but there has to be a cross section so that you can ensure that you're covering all the important areas of the institution.
Well, and the buy-in too, that's so critical. Yes. I mean, that has been a huge piece, is if somebody is expected to implement a plan, but they didn't have any say, you know, the buy-in, they can sit and criticize as opposed to saying, I had a part of this plan. I'm part of this team. My voice was heard. I feel valued. You know, I'm going to leave it all on the field and we're going to get this done.
Absolutely. So let's shift gears just slightly. How can the board educate themselves as to what they should be talking about as it relates to strategy or the strategic plan? And how important is it for the board to show the regulators that they understand that plan?
This one's actually probably the easiest one to answer. There's so much documentation, whether you go out to, you know, FDIC or FFIEC or OCC, all of our alphabet, you know, soup there of regulatory agencies, the regulatory guidance is really clear. And there's some terrific tools for directors to go out to. If you don't want to read the boring guidance, I know Bank Director and a lot of others are always talking about the strategic topics. But I do think also once boards understand their fiduciary obligation and the safety and soundness obligations of that, is to challenge the management team to come to the board with innovative ideas. And that, I think, is a big part of what a board can do, is really to help. They come from all different areas of life and adding value and different segments of the community, to really challenge and have that open dialogue and hold management, you know, really accountable based on their culture that they want to see, the vision that they want to see, you know, to really push the envelope on that thinking. But there's so many resources available to directors to go out and educate themselves. That's actually probably one of the most simple things that they can do, or ask an outside resource to come in and do some board education pre-planning. You know, what should they be doing? What should they be looking at? Especially if you've got a big changeover in your board or new directors, or even a refresher for directors that have been there a long time. I think it's a great way to kind of cleanse the palate and get ready to get into planning.
So, Marcy, you might have answered a little bit of this in the response that you just gave, but the board's supposed to be strategic. But what are the key things that management should be sharing with the board around strategy?
Well, if we're thinking about post-plan, and I think that's where you were heading to, Mike, is how does that dialogue continue post-planning session? And, you know, management does have an obligation to have that transparent discussion with the board. When you think about the key elements and what information should be exchanged, is the board should be questioning management on progress. And management should be, you know, supplying information on their progress to the board. But key metrics too. Now, metrics is something, just take a second to explain. We've got our high level metrics, or key performance indicators. Let's say your, you know, return on equity, your ROE, your ROI, ROA, all of those that are in your 3 to 5 year plan. But are you assigning some key performance indicators or metrics to other areas of the plan on the shorter term? So are we 100% done with evaluating all new job descriptions? You know, are we 50% done with process improvement projects? Can you assign some of those metrics so you can see how we're coming along with progress to the plan? Also, management should share with the board if there's any key elements, barriers, things that are happening that can throw them off course with the plan. You know, whether it's a resource issue, what is the changing landscape? Creation of some sort of reporting or dashboard is highly recommended. So whether you use something homegrown like a spreadsheet, where you've got somebody that's good at putting together graphics, or you utilize some of the great software programs out there. And I know there's several that we partner with that can really spin up some wonderful visual dashboards that can report on the progress of plans, where there might be some showstoppers, where there could be some areas we need to pump the brakes, or other things that are moving full steam ahead. So it's really that open and transparent dialogue. And as far as how often, in the past, it had maybe been on an annual basis. We started seeing that paradigm shift to quarterly. Now, with the environment that we're in, we're seeing these discussions happening monthly because of a lot of the unknowns in our current environment. I don't know if that answers the question, Mike, but it really, some boards like granularity and others like high level. Again, that goes to what kind of board are you? But at a very minimum, you know, management and the board should be challenging each other to stay on plan.
Yeah, I think that answers it, Marcy. Obviously, the board needs to monitor progress, and dashboards and key performance indicators, as you mentioned, are great ways to do that. But maybe expanding on that a little bit and getting into the discussion of being strategic versus operational, are there times when a board should get more granular, as you mentioned, or more operational in helping complete a plan versus just simply being the strategic or the monitoring function?
Yeah, a couple considerations there, Mike. I think if a organization has had challenges meeting their goals in the past, that's when a board should be more involved in, you know, determination of why those challenges had occurred. What do we need to do differently in order to reach those goals? Also, obviously, and this is a no-brainer, if there's some sort of regulatory challenge that bank is under, that's going to require, you know, more board involvement, documentation of their involvement, obviously, in minutes and challenging and understanding. So I think when there's some regulatory challenges, also, when you have a very aggressive plan that is going to require some shifts in resources, that is definitely worthwhile of becoming more granular. Or if you've got some issues with the management team not having achieved the goals in the past, that would require some granularity too.
So kind of on that point that you just made about not achieving things, you know, there's obviously some inherent conflict, I think, between what a board might want from a strategic perspective and what management might want or see from an operational perspective. How do you make sure you're reasonable from both sides in setting some of those targets and goals and strategies?
I go back to the word transparency again. It's having an open dialogue where the board is setting, you know, maybe it's a stretch goal, and management needs to be open with the board, because I've experienced this with a client in the not too recent past here, where board had always set the goals in a vacuum without management having input. So one of the things that we determined is if you've got a performance management system, so a performance management system that aligns bonuses and compensation, you know, to the strategic plan, that is something that can be very beneficial to in keeping everybody on track and understanding how those metrics work, but then also stretching. But again, if a management team is having issues, don't wait till the end of the year to say we didn't meet our targets. Talk to a board regularly and often as to what some of those challenges, issues, or barriers can be, and then you can identify what resources need to be in place to be able to achieve the goals.
So it's kind of like if nobody's happy, everybody will be happy at the end of the plan, right? And I know
hopefully not bad ever, right?
I say that in jest, but Marcy, we've just gone through another point in time where, you know, we had some unprecedented things happening, obviously the COVID-19 issues and related economic impacts and so on. What should both management and the board be doing when something unusual comes up? Are there certain triggering events that should cause us to take a step back and say, holy cow, we need to revise our plan, or we need to change our plan, or throw the old one out and start over?
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up trigger events, Mike, because that's really what we're going to have to build in moving forward, at least for this, you know, I'm using air quotes, new normal or new abnormal, if you will. You know, just recently, as some of the groups that I worked with last fall, checking in on folks, really, I would say in the March timeline, when all of this started occurring, was right around the time they were going to be reporting to the board on a quarterly progress towards the plan. And several of those executives said to me, you know, is my plan even worth the paper it's written on right now? We're at the very beginning of a new three-year plan, and basically the bottom has dropped out. What do we do? I don't even know how to evaluate what the future looks like. So started going through some exercises that I think are valuable in our current situation, but really in any situation, if there's a change that's occurring, is to take a look at your plan and to take each of your strategic priorities. And is it still valid or not valid? Are your strategies, say, heat map your strategies, you know, green, full steam ahead, yellow, requires some evaluation, red, can't do it in this environment, no longer valid. And then some of your key metrics. So maybe not your longer term goals yet. We're not going to change those high level targets, but maybe on a short term basis, we're going to assign different metrics that are going to help us determine if certain things we're doing are successful. But what it also points to with trigger events, with stress testing, lessons that we've learned from this pandemic, like what did we do well? What can we leverage? And what are things we didn't do too well? Are there strategies and priorities that are elevated? Meaning thinking about portions of your technology plan that are integrated within your enterprise-wide plan. Were there things that needed to be spun up very quickly because they were forced into the virtual environment that maybe were 2 years down your plan? Let's use like electronic signatures as one, or, you know, online account opening as another. Has that been elevated now in your plan? So what that speaks to, that agility and fluidity, is unforeseen circumstances are going to cause us to be very agile and pivot quickly. So not having that year-long action plan that we are tied to, but looking at things in more bite-sized chunks. So a quarterly action plan or a monthly action plan that is almost like building a house. You build the foundation. So what has to happen first, you know, before you look at the plan for the swimming pool in the backyard? And that's a lot of times what we've done with our old plans. Now in this new normal, we need to look at things like a phased approach and starting first things first and then building so that we can shift and pivot quickly. But those trigger events, or we can call them scenario planning too, if you will, are, you know, what if there is another spike in cases that states shut down again? What is that going to do to your plan? A vaccine, what is that going to do to your plan? Insert here what the trigger events are for you and for your particular geography, you know, business model. What are the things that can shift you? So coming up with those scenarios and those trigger events that will require you to go back and reevaluate your strategies is going to become more and more important. And to be comfortable with changing, being comfortable with shifting you know, the direction. That's sometimes the biggest part, is that comfort of, well, we're going to have to abandon something we thought we really wanted to do, but how can we pivot and really take advantage of the situation that we're in? It sounds terrible to say take advantage, but if you think about the PPP loans, Mike, right? This was an opportunity for community banking to tell their story on how well they did, you know, in helping their communities and sometimes engaging with non-customers. So how did they take advantage of that opportunity, which was not in their strategic plan, to be able to help them achieve their overall goals? Just using an example of an opportunity there.
Great. See, Marcy, I've seen some larger institutions recently adding the role of chief strategy officer and putting somebody into that role, obviously. Should institutions have somebody in that role, or is it just informally that the CEO is kind of always going to be in that role? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, there's several schools of thought. I think it's a fantastic idea to have folks that are keyed in on strategy, just, you know, for what we just discussed about, you know, this changing environment that we're in. And we were in a changing environment in our industry even before the pandemic, you know, different disruptions and changes and that pace of change. So strategy, even before I think the current situation we're in, we did start seeing more emphasis on institutions saying, we need to spend more time surveying that landscape, understanding what is happening around us, being proactive as opposed to reactive, you know, understanding what are some things that we can constantly be improving or innovating. Now, that's difficult sometimes, you know, if I'm a smaller financial institution to say, you know, I'm every hire I have to think really closely about. Maybe it's not, like you mentioned, Mike, a new hire, but that CEO shifting some priorities from maybe that hands-on day-to-day that they've become used to making sure that they look at their schedule and their time and how are they spending their time. Are they, you know, trusting some of the day-to-day to other folks within their institution and they spend much more time on strategy as opposed to just making sure, you know, the bank is running, you know, like a bank with a capital B, or entrusting that sometimes to innovation committees. I've seen this happen. Folks saying we want to have a culture of innovation. Well, what does that mean? So bringing together a committee of folks throughout the organization that come up with innovative ideas that are presented to an executive team and considered as things that can be adopted, you know, within either their strategic plan or as a part of their day-to-day. Regardless, it's a good idea to look at strategy separately from, you know, that plan. It's more of that way of being and that way of thinking. And that's where that chief strategy officer, I think, is beneficial. Like you said, whether it's formally or informally, but making sure we are taking that time, you know, and leaders, that's part of their definition, is not just the hands-on piece, but the setting the direction.
Great. Marcy, I think we've had a great discussion today. Any final key takeaways that you'd like to let our listeners know about before we wrap up?
Well, I think the key takeaways obviously are in lessons learned, you know, recently, but then as we've been seeing this paradigm shifting over the last couple of years. And that goes back to our cultures again, Mike, right? The culture of innovation, the culture of stretching the thinking, that shift in thinking. You know, if I would challenge, you know, anybody that's listening to this saying, yes, you know, we talked about risk, we talked about all those key elements that need to be in a plan, but to push the envelope and push the thinking. If it's one word that I have heard time and time again from boards and from CEOs and management teams is determining their relevancy in today's minds of the consumer, their relevancy in the industry, meaning banking as a way of being as opposed to an entity. That relevancy issue is something that keeps coming back up. And the only way we ensure that as an industry, we remain relevant is to shift that culture and that thinking to a strategic way of being.
Well, thanks a lot, Marcy. This has been an enlightening conversation today. I think that'll wrap our conversation up. Hopefully we were able to give our listeners some helpful information on both the roles of board and management as it relates to strategy and strategic planning. Again, thank you for your time and guidance on this. We'd also like to remind everybody to visit our website at www.wifley.com for our COVID-19 Resource Center, as well as lots of other great information, topics of interest, and other thought leadership. Till next time, this has been a Bank on Wifley podcast.
You've been listening to Bank on Wifley. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and tune into the next episode as we feature insights from other leaders in the financial industry and even more ways you can stay ahead of the curve.